Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
On this week's episode of Unwritten.
And now Baruchy hits Kiermaier on the first pitch, and it's just natural to wonder if this has anything to do with yesterday and the card that he picked up.
I had a piece of paper right there, picked it up. At that point, I'm not giving it back.
I was joking with somebody that their biggest free agent acquisition is Carlos Beltran. I know how it works, you know.
Next pitch. There's the changeup. Bang, bang, takes it.
Hello and welcome to Unwritten from Odyssey and MLB. My name is Ron Darling. With me, of course, is Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy, we have a spicy topic today, one that's been in the news almost nonstop for the last couple of years. Yeah, this episode is all about sign stealing. Now, teams have been trying to steal each other's signs forever because it can be such a huge advantage if you know what's coming. And MLB has had a written rule since 2000 outlawing the use of technology to help steal signs. The Astros violated it, and other teams as well, by the way, but the Astros paid for it. And we all know what happened there, but the unwritten rules of how players and coaches on the field can steal signs are more fluid. We're going to define those rules today and break them down with the help from the one and only John Boy. But first, Jimmy, do you have any good sign-stealing stories from your career?
Nothing that led to anything, but yeah, I mean, I was doing my damnedest to steal everybody's sign. I got on second base. Actually, I would do it from first base. I would figure it out before then. And with technology today, look, everyone has the same advantage. No one's at a disadvantage. You have a center field camera looking at the pitchers, looking at the catcher signs. You can tell when a pitcher acknowledges it, and he throws a pitch. You have guys that are in everyone's batting cage area right above where they're sitting on a computer, and they're writing the catcher sequences down and circling the pitch. So everybody knows what sign everybody's using. It's up to the team, to that pitch, to understand like that if we're doing this, the other team has to be doing that. So to keep your signs on rotation, that okay, maybe for the first inning we'll give them what they're looking for. You know, if a guy gets on, we'll give them what they're looking for. But as soon as, you know, a guy gets on a second time, then we're going to have to switch it up. And, you know, whether it's go to touches or, you know, sign after two, strikes plus one, outs plus one, all those different things, you have to be aware of it. So Chase, who was a teammate of mine, I mean, he was – he had to be he had to be the most – suspecting of other people stealing signs because he knew that we did it. He would run in. He would look at guys.
So he's paranoid.
Straight paranoia. he'd come to guys, talk to them, you know, distract them. I see what you're doing. You know, trying to put that fear of them, like something might happen. So that's about as far as it went, as far as, you know, anything close to happening. But I know they tried to, you know, pick up on me picking and giving signs. And, you know, they come up and tell me, hey, I know what you're doing. I'm like, good, well, stop us. You know what I'm saying? Because you have no idea what I'm doing because we just switched it up before today's game, what we're going to use to let you know I have the sign. So it's always something done. Like they say, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Mm. And it isn't cheating if I can beat you at your game. But what is cheating is using technology in real time to cheat the game and to take advantage of the other team. That's the difference. Sign stealing is perfectly okay in the game, as long as you're picking fairly. Everybody has the same advantage. No one's at a disadvantage. But using it in real time, signaling, whistling, playing music, banging on trash cans, for example, that's outright cheating.
Well, if you're playing poker and every time one of your mates gets a good hand and he starts to play with his chips, that's not cheating. It's just he's bad at his game. But I do know from the pitcher's point of view, I was always trying to make sure that hitters weren't or base runners weren't trying to take advantage. And it started in the box because not many, I would say a half a dozen in my career, and I played almost 15 years, a half a dozen in my career, you had peakers, guys that would, you could tell that they weren't really looking for signs because it's hard enough to get that. They were looking for a location late. So they would see where the catcher's setting up. That would have to be taken care of in a certain way, usually with a putt pitch up and in, or you could just walk off the mound. And I once said to a player, I won't say who it is because I don't want to embarrass him, but I walked off the mound and said, do not do that. Do not do that again. I know what you're doing. Guys at first base, you had to be very careful because I had a catcher who used to always have that flared right leg.
Loved it. Loved it.
He always had that flared right leg. And then on real hot days, if they didn't have any sleeves on, you could really see them give the changeup sign. Their whole forearm would ripple if they were very muscular, you know? So you could see that. Or you could see the breaking ball, which meant you as a guy who loved to steal bases, that's a great pitch to run on. The guy gets on second base now. What I remember, I don't remember guys stealing signs as much because I always felt like my signs were complicated enough. I didn't have to worry about that. But if you had a catcher who was a little lazy that day, or just that's the way he was, would set up too early, inside or out. I remember the second baseman would take the runner on second would take his lead and put his left hand out towards the bag or his right hand out towards third base, and he was given location. If he went to third base, that pitch is inside. He went to second base, that pitch is going to be outside to a right-handed hitter. So I was always not as paranoid as Chase Utley, but I was always had a bit of paranoia to make sure that you weren't being taken advantage that way. So the unwritten rule, really, is players and coaches in uniform can attempt to decipher the signs and relay them to teammates on the field. But involving other team personnel or using technology, as Jimmy said, you nailed it and spelled it out. You know, there's been so many, there's histories of signs being stolen from the 1870s. You know, we've been talking a lot about the Astros. We also heard a little bit about the Yankees and the Red Sox. The Red Sox were using, I think, an Apple Watch to try to figure it out. But, you know, in two separate memos in 2017 and 18, after a lot of the iPads and things were being used on the bench, Commissioner Rob Manfred finally addressed it and said, it was really, I always thought the memo was like this. I know what you guys been doing. So from today, do not do it anymore. And I think that's why, you know, the Astros were fined the way they were fined. A lot of teams were trying to get that advantage, but they would get the advantage of the sign sequence stealing. So what would happen is when they got on second base, they would know to be able to relay the signs. What the Astros did, they took it to a new
a
level.
A whole nother planet.
Well, you know what happens is that it's addictive. So you know it. When you're on second, runners on second base, you know the signs.
Yeah.
But now you're like, I hit a home run my last at bat. I got to have these signs all the time. And that's where I think the trash banging of the trash can happened because guys are like, okay, how can we take this to not only pitches on second, not only pitches that we know, but every single pitch? And I think that's what cost, Alex Cora's job. It called,
AJ Hinch
cost him his job.
Carlos Beltran, yep.
Yeah, he lost his job with the Mets. So I wonder with this new technology now how they're going to try to stop it. I think. What do you like about this? Is even better. Sorry. What about the PitchCom? Do you like it so far? It's the ability of the catcher to deliver the signs. You know it, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be working so great so far.
Well, you know, that's one way to counter for the catchers and pitchers is that there is no sign. There's a button that he pushes. There's a earpiece in, and, you know, it's recorded. You know, it's recorded by the catcher, whomever they designate as the voice for that moment. And it's done in each player's language, which makes it a lot easier. And I don't like it. I love the fact that you give signs, you know, and it's just been part of the game. Give the sign to the pitch, shake it off, I agree with it, and throw the pitch. Its effectiveness, I'm not sure. I don't think it necessarily, you know, changes the success rate of a pitcher getting hit or out or a batter or teams not being able to pick up on things. There's still ways, you know, to pick up on something. It could be in a glove and you could still relay it, but that's something that they're trying to do. And this is the pilot year, and we'll see how it works. Maybe it speeds the game up a little bit. People talk about the pace of play all the time. But, I mean, if you press the wrong button, you know, you still just like getting a signal. He's going to shake it off or he's going to agree to it. So it's a little different. I love technology. I don't like it in a game as much. But I guess in light of what's happening, you know, with you know, real-time cheating happening, that's one way to counter it.
You know, it's funny. On broadcasts, I can decipher a pitcher's signs with his catcher within two batters. It's very easy because guys don't make it as complicated as they should. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with the catcher and the pitcher. Sometimes they just, that relationship, they can't really go to that third level of making sure the signs are difficult to decipher.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Call for the changeup. Bang, bang. And Farquhar steps off and says, can you hear it? He's like, hey, they got the signs. We got to change this.
I'm really sorry about the choices that were made by my team.
This is for baseball, it's for the Astros, and it's for AJ Hinch, who had the most pompous quotes looking back.
Well, Jimmy Rollins, we're lucky to have on Unwritten Jimmy O'Brien of John Boy. And Jimmy, I'll never forget the first time that I really dove into your content. I had spent the week prior doing weekend game for the Yankees, with the Yankees. And Aaron Boone and I were talking about Brett Gardner. And I said, when you think about Brett Gardner, what do you think about? What's the word you think about? He says, he's a savage. And I thought that was just a word I had never heard to describe a ball player. And then when your great baseball content captured it with Booney getting thrown out of a game, walk me through that afternoon game.
Yeah, that was afternoon game. It was a makeup of a rainout from the day before on a weekday. So no one's in the crowd at all.
And no one's happy about that.
Yeah. And he was getting on the ump from the start. So it's kind of the perfect storm. There's no fans around. The hot mics picked up a lot of the words, and then I could fill in the blanks on the other. And it was just I watched the video a lot because there's a lot of funny lines that are said. Booney's pretty funny when he gets going because he's like constructive and so earnest, but also kind of ripping the ump apart. You know, I think the first words he says is just really bad start. Which cracks me up, pretty honest. And then the savages in the box is just like, you're right. Is that normal to, like, you know, it's interesting to hear that he had used that before.
Our guys are savages in that box. Our guys are savages.
You would guess it. You can't just be dropping that the first time screaming in front of the ump, because the ump is like, what are you talking about? Like, what does that have to do with me? But for on our end, as soon as that happens and I'm making it, I worked every single game, we still do, and just had kind of all the stuff in place to attack big moments like that. So like I was making the video, doing the lip reading, calling our graphic designer. We got to make shirts. He was actually just buying a house, so I then did the design so we could put out some shirts. And it was just it was crazy. That was the first thing we did that left the internet. Like, they talked about it on WFAN radio and ESPN wrote an article on us. And I was on MLB TV talking about stuff. So that was the first time we'd been doing it for 2 years and growing nicely, where we jumped to, like, you know, legacy media audiences, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of just Booney being a crazy guy. So,
well, when I think of Booney having those kind of arguments, it's part his dad, Bob Boone, and part Stanford. So he's got the real educated side that he begins with, but his dad had a way about him as well. So Jimmy and I on the show of Unwritten, we're talking about unwritten rules in the game, but we're talking about sign stealing. And you really flushed out and broke. Your baseball content is beyond when it comes to entertaining. But this one to me was the first time that it was also entertaining and it was investigative journalism at its best.
Yeah, a lot of credit, all the credit goes to Rosenthal and Drellich and The Athletic, and then for getting guys like Fires and Farquhar on the record talking about it, because they really risked a lot putting that story out. What I did was I read it. I read a lot of The Athletic. I like, and it was so interesting. And then coming from an audio video background, I said, wait, I mean, this is a reliever who's talking about an appearance in Houston. How many times does a reliever pitch in a away ballpark, especially when they're not in the same division? So that's probably easy to find. So if you go to Farquhar's game log from that season and you find it, and then you just listened. I was like, wonder if I can hear this banging. He's talking about it. And it was so clear and obvious because he said he steps off the mound because he heard it. So
next pitch, there's the changeup. Bang, bang. Takes it. There was the off speed. Now it's like, wait, what? What's going on here? Now look, fastball outside. So quick, two signs. Geared up for the fastball, fouls it off. Next pitch, change up. Bang, bang. Bang, bang. And Farquhar steps off and says, can you hear it?
I kind of did that naturally. Like I used to listen to podcasts. I would listen to the R2C2 podcast with Rucco and Sabathia, and they would talk about old stories of, you know, their playing days and stuff. And speaking of Brett Gardner, like, he hit a triple, and I would go find the footage because podcasts. So I just always did that. And then I started sharing that, what I would find, and like walking it through quickly so other people can kind of see the same thing I saw, or, you know, tell that story. But it went crazy because The Athletic is the written word behind a paywall in our day and age. I made a 2-minute video on every social media channel. So, I mean, that blew up. That one went bigger than the internet, went bigger than baseball, went bigger than sports, because it's an appealing story for anyone. You know, your grandma, your aunt that doesn't care about sports, they're going to tune in for a cheating scandal. So that was a huge story.
Who doesn't like a good cheating scandal?
Yeah.
My question along those lines, when you have something like this, you know, something that can change people's careers. You talked about the guys putting, you know, their careers on the line. When you decide to break a story of this nature, you're also putting yourself on the line and understanding, you know, the consequences that can come because of it. So what or when do you decide, okay, this is something that needs to happen versus, okay, maybe not as much?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's how it's presented. For me, that was, like Ron said, that I made it. And I said to Jake, my partner here, and I said that felt more like journalism than an entertaining video, which doesn't feel natural, really. Like, I like diving into things, but I always like sharing it in a voice that's like, this is just me. And I think we've outgrown that a little bit too much. And I think during the course of that video, I outgrew it before I realized it, that I couldn't start just looking at things and being interested in them and sharing that interest, because it all of a sudden fell with some weight because they thought I was the guy that broke the first one, even though I just made a video about the article. And I just got to keep all my fun to myself. Like, I thought it was captivating. Like, so one aspect is that's bizarre, because then I heard Michael Kay show, Joel Sherman reported that there was rumors of the buzzers, and Michael Kay show was doing a whole day on the buzzers. So I'm like, this is interesting. So I started doing it. Now I get associated as I made up those rumors, or I was the first one, when I was reacting to ESPN radio and Joel Sherman at the Post, and if that's where he is, articles, because it was just out there. But then because my other video went so big, now it's like, you made him up. People still think that that's the case in Houston. But for me, like, it was true that Altuve was wearing an undershirt, or no undershirt all game. And then when he thought they were going to celebrate, he put on an undershirt, and then the Yankees tied it up. So he had a hit again, and it was off again. That's so interesting and weird.
Yeah.
You know, and the tattoo story holds up, and I fully believe him because he had a bad tattoo. He fixed it, blah, blah, but that's still interesting. But I got in trouble because all of a sudden people saw me as more, not just a fan having fun reacting to bizarre red strings on a wall, you know? So I don't know. Can I answer your question? Like, there is some line. I don't ever want to feel like a reporter. I think it's part of my bio now. Like, I'm not trying to report or get people in trouble. Like, you know, The Athletic kind of had the smoking gun. I just found the video, but there was a lot of fun to that whole saga that I got myself in trouble getting ahead of it.
Well, you know, it's funny. And sometimes in the internet, everyone gets painted with the same brush, right? But I think that as a ball player, former ball players, you get very myopic about what you do. And you tend to think about that you play the game and you're the only one who knows about the game. As soon as I became a broadcaster in the last 20 years, I've really felt this great thing about baseball is that there's 100 different ways to look at the game. And I think that that's what makes it fantastic. And I'm all in. But I would love to know, like, because I it seems to me, I don't know you, it seems to me that you have a great sense of humor and you're totally in on entertaining and all that stuff. But do you have a mantra when you're doing sports, but particularly baseball, where, like, I see the game in one way, I don't see it the way you see it, but I want to. So is there like a mantra when you look at a game and say, boy, I find that interesting because, or whatever.
Yeah, I try to just share whatever I find interesting. Like me personally, I love pitcher-catcher communication. PitchCom is somewhat ruining that. Mm-hmm. And I'm somewhat okay because I understand it. But I used to make videos all the time of just the catcher and the pitcher shaking off or fake shakes or you know, that whole communication. I did a whole video actually in 2019 of Tanaka and Gary Sanchez, who speak Japanese and Spanish, but they're fully communicating in sign language all game. It's fascinating. And some people that like isn't even, they don't take it in at all. And then for me, I'm like, they're having a conversation the entire time and they don't even speak the same language. So I like that. I know that. For me, Ron, when I started tweeting and building an audience and people started coming to me with their opinions, I was like, oh, yeah. I only talk to my friends, my dad, my brothers about, and we're all pretty much on the same wavelength. And all these different opinions come and I'm like, oh, you view it way different than I do. And then doing the podcast with Plouffe, who's a big leaguer for parts of 8-9 years.
Yeah.
He has a much different perspective because he comes from the player side of things. Where sometimes we butt heads there too, because I'm like, no, fans can still be fans. Like, we're allowed to be irrational.
And, you know. No, you're not. That's the problem. Yeah. No, you're not. No,
yeah.
You're not.
We're like, because the biggest thing for me is players don't get too hot, don't get too happy, don't get too mad, stay even keeled the whole season. Fans, I give the complete opposite advice. Live and die with every game. Who the hell wants to be an even keeled fan?
That's right.
That is so boring. But good, I understand from a player.
Very good point.
So, you know, we live and die with the wins and losses, and I understand players can't. But that's two different things. They're both right, I think.
That's right.
I don't disagree with that, and that's something that I've had to learn growing up playing baseball in Philadelphia, that the fan really believes in their heart of hearts that they want to win that game more than you. And it's because of what you just said. We have to kind of keep it within, you know, a range of, you know, not too high, not too low, because we have to show up again tomorrow, where that fan may have been having this, you know, game on their calendar for 2 months. They've waited 2 months. They've seen the good games leading to that point, the bad games. And now this is their opportunity to let you know how much of a fan they are. And if it's not going right, trust me, they're going to let you know that also. So I definitely get the part where and why you encourage the fan to be a fan, because when you're at home and everything's going great, you love it. You want the most rabid, loudest, craziest fans because they're for you. And you want them to give the other team the business. Hey, say whatever you need to give us that home field advantage. But when it's happening to you and you're receiving it, you never think of it that way. It's just like, you know, you hear it all the time. How would you like if I came to your job and yelled at you and blah, 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 blah. Well, the job that we accepted says that we have to deal with that stuff. So we in certain cities, especially East Coast cities, mainly East Coast cities, you have to learn how to love, how to understand the fan and the fact that they believe on every single game they come to. They want to win that game more than you. You're borrowing the uniform. You have a time limit. They're fans until they expire on this earth.
I do think there's something fascinating about that players come and go, but fans are always there. And it's, you love the players when they're there, but there is some level of like, you know, when I'm a little kid, I thought that every Yankee lived in New York and loved New York. And, you know, I meet players now and it's like, they don't even see their teammates in the off season. And you just kind of fantasize this and you understand that as you grow up, but as a fan, that's what you want to believe. So you kind of believe it. I also think that fans act way different at the ballpark than they do watching from home, because like you said, they paid to go to that game. So show me something tonight, make my ticket worthwhile. So in the East Coast, the boos are a little more freely, you know, because it's like, damn, on the night that I'm here, boo.
As long as you cheer
twice as loud as you boo, I don't mind kind of just like, if you're booing the moment, you know, if it's a big moment, a guy strikes out, people get really offended by it now, but I don't think there's that much weight behind it. I just think it's like, I wanted something different. Boo. But I think that it's important that you cheer. Like Cole had a rough outing. He didn't make it out of the first. He gets booed. Next game, Cole goes seven. The whole stadium's on their feet cheering for him. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's a good feeling.
Yeah, I always think the premeditated boo is not my favorite. The fan that comes to boo because of what happened in the last game, that's always my least favorite. But the booing, that's part of it. When I first came back to New York in an Oakland uniform, I was in Yankee Stadium out in Wright Center, and this fan, hey, Ron Darling, I can't believe you're here. I loved you with the Mets, this or that. 3 seconds go by. You're still a bum, you know? So those are the kind of things that you have to deal with that are great. Hey, listen, we're doing the show about unwritten rules. And we've talked about interacting with umpires, brawls, running up the score, whatever. What's an unwritten rule that you find nonsense?
Well, the 3-0 I find pretty nonsensical at this time. It's kind of switched after the San Diego stuff 2 years ago with Texas. I think a lot of people were like, what?
Yeah, I didn't like it personally. You know, when you're up by seven in the eighth inning, it's typically not a good time to swing 3-0. Like I said, the norms are being challenged on a daily basis. So
any unwritten rule that is just because the pitcher has a weapon and then he can use it. I don't like, like, you know, a lot
that's
of
about 95% of them.
Yeah. It's a lot of them. So there's some I still like, and I just think it's in the spirit of the game. But I mean, in this day and age, you get contracts based on stats. And
that's right.
And if you, just because you threw three balls doesn't mean I can't swing at the next one.
I completely agree. The Jimmies are in agreement on that one, Brian. Yeah,
I like that. If I had one superpower in the booth, one superpower, it would be able to read lips. You are amazing at it. I'm the worst. If a player or umpire swears, I got that one. But I cannot read lips for, and it would really help. How do you do it?
And Bud Black just points and goes, that's low. That is too low. Phil Cuzzy responds, I'm not listening to you all night.
I don't know. I mean, I think context looms pretty large. Sometimes people send me one-off clips that aren't from a game, or I don't know the context of the game. And I'm like, I don't. But then other times I can get it. Growing up, I could do it. My dad would rewind the TiVo and say, what do you just say, Jim? And I could like somewhat figure it out. I never really utilized it until I started making these videos. The first one was Ron Culpa. He said to Hinch, he said, I can do whatever I want. And I saw it and I Googled it, and not a lot of people were talking about it. And I was like, that, I don't know. I mean, if, I feel like I have something that other people don't. Or recently, everyone thought Joe Girardi was screaming at Scherzer, which is kind of a big deal because he was trying to pick a fight with another player.
Yeah.
I watched it and I could see that he was saying, Kevin Long.
Yeah.
He's like, you want to go, Kalo? And I was like, oh, that's the coach. That's a different story than people are writing right now. They think he was yelling at the pitcher. So in a way, to answer an earlier question, that was kind of like, I knew that was kind of like journalistic in a way. Cause I was like, hey, like, people need to know he wasn't yelling at a player. It's different to yell at another coach than the player. There's some sort of line there. So I could just read that one. But I don't know how or why. Sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it's really easy and quick. Certain managers are easy. Certain managers aren't, but it's fun.
I'm sure you would have had a hard time understanding my manager, Charlie Manuel.
Yeah.
One you had to draw. Two, I love Charlie, but, you know, sometimes the teeth would come out. It'll just mess you all up. So if you could find a good Charlie one and you can break that down with the mute button on, please let us know.
No way. Brett Gardner has the draw and he talks through like tight lips, and I never worked about it.
Well, Jimmy O'Brien, thank you so much for coming on Unwritten. John Boy is one of the best things to go and see baseball content. You have more than baseball content, of course, but people who love baseball, they will love it for so many other reasons. The way that Jimmy O'Brien and his folks, I know you have a lot of help over there, get these videos out and entertain and explain. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me, guys.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
One of the things I remember, Jimmy, about sign stealing is that, I'm not talking about Astro sign stealing, I'm not talking about regular sign stealing, is when it would happen on the bench and one of the players would say, I have his signs, you'd have certain players who say, I don't want them. Don't give them to me. Why is that?
I was one of those guys. I did not know. I mean, even if you forgot and were trying to give it to me, I just wouldn't pay attention. For me, and I think for a lot of guys, when you know what's coming, when you can get that heads up, you just swing just because. You no longer start trying to, you know, read the pitch or look at the count and say, okay, this is count. He's going to do this. And you become solely reliant on that guy. And it's less about hitting and more about, is he giving me the sign? The last thing you want to do in the box is not have your mindset on hitting, not trust your instincts. Some guys were like, you know what? I want to know what's coming because I operate better in that in that situation, especially when runners were in scoring position. Now, if don't get me wrong, if there was a run on third and less than two outs and he could pick up something and, you know, maybe, you know, or look, it isn't just the players. Sometimes it's the coaches. You know, they take a step left, they take a step right, and I can get a heads up on a guy that I'm struggling against, that I'm not feeling comfortable, or I'm just not comfortable in the box at that moment, then, yeah, I'll take that as a situation to get that RBI. But other than that, look, it's just like spring training when you guys, hey, change up, fastball, slider. Now, yes, you're anticipating your takes look great on a bad pitch, but on one that's decent, that's hanging out in the strike zone long enough, you have bad swings and misses. And why did I swing? I know it's spring training because I knew what was coming. That is it. So for me, it never worked. I like to read it and make a decision, you know, although it happens fast. I like to make a decision on a pitch and anticipate what I think is going to happen as opposed to knowing what was going to happen.
That's funny. We always think about sign stealing as just knowing what the pitch is going to be, but we never talk about coaches, third and first base coaches. You can sometimes get their signs if you have a certain skill.
Yes, you can. I don't like to pick on the Mets, but you know, I knew everything
yes,
they were
do.
Doing.
Yes, you do.
I just did. Okay, maybe just a little bit.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm always one as an infielder. I'm always looking around, looking for situations. You know, hey, I noticed they went hat, ear, leg across the belt, back to the ear, across the bib of the hat, and something happened, you know, and you remember these sequences. So when a situation comes up again, you see it. It's like, I mean, and you can't do it in today's game as much, but hey, you call a timeout, you call out the catcher and the pitcher. Hey, look, hey, you know, let's make them run out again. Let's try a pitch out here or maybe set up. I know the situation doesn't, you know, call for fastball away. You were trying to get them out, but maybe let's set up a little bit outside to give ourselves a chance. And if they don't pick up on that or they think I'm just, you know, calling timeout to talk about pitch sequence, then they're wrong. So I'm always looking and studying because someone is giving away something, whether they realize it or not. And you can't see everyone. So you have to find out who's the one giving the signs, who's responsible. You have the decoys. You have coaches standing next to each other and they're both doing it. One of them is real and one of them isn't. So, Look, you know, is stealing a sign cheating? No, I'm beating you at your game. That's what I'm supposed to do. But using technology in real time when it's clearly giving you an advantage, that is just completely there's completely no room in the game for that.
I remember I was at a golf tournament and part of the after golf scene was Bobby Thompson, shot heard round the world.
Yep.
And Ralph Branca were doing an interview with Bob Costas, who was sitting between them and asking them questions. And Bob went to Ralph Branca first and he said, Ralph, what was your life like the day after Bobby Thompson hit the home run? He said, I was devastated because they were stealing signs. That's the first thing. That's the first thing he said. He said that I knew they were stealing signs. I certainly didn't like my pitch, but the Giants went 49-17 down the stretch to catch us because they were stealing signs. I was like, this was 50 years after the event. So people can still be bitter about it. I mean, there's so many instances of teams stealing signs. It will always be that way. The pitch com might help. But I think when you think of, to me, the final verdict on stealing signs is that within the framework of the game, nothing from the bench, nothing lights in center field, no one whistling from third base, none of that stuff. Within the framework of the game, that you're using your brain power while you're also using your physicality to get an advantage, I think is something that I think should always be a big part of the game, because it's a beautiful part of the game. And it's usually a part of the game that's passed down to you from someone who was your mentor.
And Ron, I could not agree with you more than that. Look, if I do my homework and you're not doing yours, I have the advantage. It's that simple. I did nothing that you couldn't have done to take advantage of what we're doing on our side, or to know that they do this. How can I one up that? It's a game of cat and mouse. This is, you know, you always say this is chess, not checkers. Yes, it is. I'm trying to put you in a position where you have no moves left and I have everything. You have to find a way to get out of that. And you're talking about baseball IQ. I think that's something that is a part of baseball IQ that does not get talked about. How to take advantage of the things that are happening around you without the other team knowing. That doesn't require speed. That doesn't require a great arm. That doesn't require your ability to make, you know, contact. Isn't just purely instincts. It takes homework. It takes time. And it's something that you learn. It is passed down. Then you learn it. Then you learn to perfect the craft. It is a craft. I mean, there's some guys, they can look at two or three pitches like, I got them. What? How? what do you see? It, you know, those are things that when you talk about a player's IQ, all that factors in, and then the way he implements it in the game. That's what separates, you know, good players from great players. Not just the talented, everybody's talented at that level, but what takes a guy to the next level? And that's something I think doesn't get spoken about enough.
You know, one of the great things that I'm learning here from Unwritten, working with you, Jimmy, is you got a PhD in baseball. I'm Ron Darling, Jimmy Rollins, Unwritten. Thanks for listening. Unwritten is a production of Odyssey and Major League Baseball. Our senior producer is Paul Aspen of Odyssey with Ian Kay of Major League Baseball. Lena Glazer is the executive producer of 2400 Sports at Odyssey. Jody Avergan and Nick Trotta of MLB are executive producers. Special thanks to everyone at Major League Baseball and Odyssey who helped make this show happen. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating or a review in your podcast or player of choice. Or just tell someone about the show. For Jimmy Rollins, I'm Ron Darling. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon with more on baseball's Unwritten Rules.